You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. And now, for some moments of wonder and joy and curiosity and science. So maybe you grew up loving dinosaurs as a kid. Maybe you have a kid of your own who could tell you the name of every dinosaur out there or even wants to study them one day. Well, we brought someone special here to Studio 2 today, a real-life paleontologist. Ohenia Gold is an assistant professor of biology at Suffolk University who spent her career studying and even digging up animals from the distant past, here to talk to us about paleontology, ancient creatures here, and being a woman paleontologist. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
It's all so cool.
I agree.
So when did you first sort of get the bug?
My first earliest memories as a three-year-old, I already enjoyed dinosaurs. I already wanted to be a paleontologist. So I've never had a conscious memory without that.
So what did you wonder over most as a little one?
As a little one, really just trying to picture this world where these giant creatures walked around and just lived their lives. I think that was the most intriguing part, is how could these things have existed when the world is so different today?
So when I came up as a kid, we still had our old views of dinosaurs. So we didn't yet know about feathers. We didn't really know about the bird thing yet. We still thought the big plodding. When you were 3, 4, and 5 and falling in love with that history, did we sort of know what we know now about the basics? Or did your world sort of turn upside down at some point too?
That's a really interesting question, because I think for paleontologists, they've known for a long time that birds are dinosaurs, and it took a while for that to trickle down into popular culture and for me to be exposed to it as a child. So Jurassic Park came out when I was, I think, 8, and that was really the first exposure to the general public that these creatures were not as pictured in, you know, the 1940s and 50s. I remember doing a senior thesis project as a high schooler where I read a book that really described how birds are dinosaurs, and that's really when my world thinking shifted.
All right, so can we play a little lightning round game of dinosaur, not a dinosaur?
Oh, I would love to.
Okay, so eagles, dinosaur, not a dinosaur?
Dinosaur.
Okay, crocodiles?
Not a dinosaur.
So, but older than dinosaurs?
Older than dinosaurs, and okay. Related, closely related,
so
but not dinosaurs.
Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. So crocodiles and birds are each other's closest relatives that are alive today. It's weird to think of, yes. In terms of living creatures, they are each other's closest relatives. But if we dive back towards, you know, the latest part of the Paleozoic, something like 250-ish million years ago, 300 million years ago.
So just a little bit ago.
Yeah, just really. Like yesterday.
Right.
There was this sort of population of animals that had very reptile-y features that then split into things that became crocodiles and things that became dinosaurs and birds. So they are closely related, but not. It doesn't appear that way anymore.
Okay, snakes, dinosaurs, not a dinosaur.
Not a dinosaur.
Okay, and older than dinosaurs, newer than dinosaurs?
Oh, that's a tough one for me. I think snakes and lizards, modern snakes and lizards, are a little bit more young than
newer.
Dinosaurs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last one. Sharks. Dinosaurs?
No.
Okay. You're
shark,
like, oh, no.
No, not at all. No, sharks are cartilaginous fish. They've been around for hundreds of millions of years. They're a very ancient line.
So wait, so you're like, no, but also like way older than dinosaurs?
Way older than dinosaurs, yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That surprises me a little bit. Is it because underwater creatures are just way older than dinosaurs?
Yeah. So life, we think, evolved in the ocean first. And so many of these oceanic marine types of groups like sharks and fish were around for millions of years prior to all of the terrestrial things like amphibians and lizards and snakes and dinosaurs and crocs and birds and people.
Okay, so, and let me just, we're speaking with, I want to get this right, Ohenia Gold, who is a professor of biology at Suffolk University, spent her career studying and digging up animals from the distant past. I want to come to this area right now. A few years ago, we actually named an official state dinosaur. I think I can do this. Podokasaurus holiokensis. Yes?
Yes.
Great.
Correct.
Do we have dinosaurs that were in this region?
We have two.
Yeah.
Podocosaurus is one of them, mm-hmm. and Ankylosaurus is the other one.
Ankylosaurus.
Yes.
Which is just fun to say.
It is, yes. Most of these dinosaur names are sort of melodious and fun to try to pronounce. These are both dinosaurs from the Triassic period, so the first part of the Mesozoic, so really early dinosaurs. And then we don't really have a ton of good exposure for later Mesozoic rocks that would have the more charismatic dinosaurs that we're familiar with.
Charismatic being like T-Rex.
Correct.
And Velociraptor.
The
and
things
all
people
those.
Think of.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, but this is what struck me about that, because I don't remember how long ago it was, but sometime in the last few years, we spoke with a photographer who did a bunch of underwater photography at the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Preserve, which is just several miles off our coast, photographing whales and unusual sea creatures. It sounds to me like if we got off the land and went into the sea, in fact, our region could be rich in the history of truly ancient creatures, potentially. If you're telling me that, for example, sharks, we have the largest population of great white sharks anywhere in the world here in our region right now. So is it possible that it's because we haven't been able to find fossils on the... I'm just looking for us to be cooler in the prehistoric era than it seems like we are. Is it possible we had more ancient animals than we might think, but they were in the water?
Yeah, that's definitely possible that some of these sediments are out underwater now that, you know, the environments have changed. And it's not that Massachusetts doesn't have prehistoric creatures. It's just not the one. It's not dinosaurs. It's mostly Paleozoic things like trilobites and small invertebrates rather than, you know, the cool stuff like dinosaurs.
Rather than the sexy ones.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. So now I want to talk about you, because it is actually still quite remarkable, more remarkable than it should be, that you do what you do as a woman scientist, correct?
That does seem to be the public perception. In our professional conferences, our professional society for paleontology, it's a pretty good 50-50 split. It's just harder to get that to trickle into, you know, talking head type documentaries and into public perception.
Why?
I don't have an answer for that. It's actually really interesting that it's for non-paleontologists, they're always pretty shocked that I'm a woman and a paleontologist and I've done this thing. But for me, you know, attending these conferences since I was an undergrad, that's how the society is. It's taken a little bit of time for us to make it through all of the ranks. So it seems like there's fewer women in the top tiers of the society than there are in the like grad school, early career type levels. But we're evening it out.
And so now you are a biologist. And again, we're speaking with Ohenia Gold, who's an assistant professor at Suffolk University in the world of paleontology, but actually a biologist. And that threw me at first, right? Because if I'm going to say we have a lawyer here, I'm going to say they're a lawyer and they're in law. But I'm actually saying you're a biologist, but you're in paleontology. And that's an interesting dimension of science, I think, for people to understand. So explain how that works.
Sure. Paleontology sits in a really interesting intersection between geology, so the study of rocks, and biology, the study of living things. Because ultimately what we're doing is trying to understand life that is extinct now. So we need to understand the rocks because that's where we find that life. And we need to understand biology and how modern animals are put together and how they work so that we can really make inferences and understand what we're seeing in these ancient creatures.
So when you do that, what is the biology that you bring to bear? Do you understand my, as a layperson who took not a lot of biology after high school and even less geology?
So I'll answer that with a little insight onto my own research. I'm interested in changes in the brain. So in order to understand changes in the brains of dinosaurs as they evolved into birds, I need to understand how brains work today. We don't get preserved brains in the fossil record. They disintegrate very quickly. So if I understand how brains are put together and all of their physiology, how they work in modern creatures, I can make inferences as to how dinosaurs use their brains and what that can tell us about their behavior.
So for example?
For example, I looked at regions active during flight for part of my dissertation. And then I used that to see which areas of dinosaur brains were bigger than other dinosaurs and made inferences as to how much they were flying based on these areas of the brain.
So you could kind of figure out, even when you couldn't see, for example, how much a dinosaur might fly, you would be able to figure that out by studying today's brains of things that fly.
Correct.
Is this how we know, for example, that an emu or an ostrich, that its predecessor, for lack of a better word, flew at one point?
Yeah, kind of. So we can see how their closest relatives in the fossil record, we can see what their arms look like. We can look at muscle attachment points and make these inferences as to how much muscle, how long their arms were, their body size in general, and put all of that information together to understand what their ancestors were doing in terms of flying, being terrestrial, what types of foods they ate, et cetera.
Okay, so what's the next big question now? I mean, one might argue, and you're going to look at me like I'm an idiot, because if I really knew what I was talking about, obviously I wouldn't argue this, right? But one might argue, we kind of know now, right? We kind of know that dinosaurs died because of a comet. We kind of know that now, and we know the birds were dinosaurs, and we know how they evolved. So what's the next big burning question?
That is a great question, and I will answer that with a situation where we could have never predicted a couple of things that have happened in the last 10, 15 years. So for me, growing up as a dinosaur geek, which I say lovingly, I didn't think there would ever be a time where we could understand feather color in extinct dinosaurs.
Because you couldn't see the feathers?
Correct. And in the last 10, 15 years, we have figured out chemical analyses that can tell us what color these feathers were. So now, when I was growing up, no idea what color dinosaurs were. Now, modern day, we can actually make inferences as to what colors are preserved on these feathers in fossil dinosaurs.
And dinosaurs had feathers.
Some of them, yes. Potentially most of them.
Potentially most of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I might actually picture a T-Rex walking around with feathers.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what would it tell me if I knew that T-Rex were, I don't know, five colors of the rainbow, look like a walking Skittle?
Well, feather color does a lot of different jobs for birds today. So again, using these modern animals to make inferences about the fossil record, birds use their feather colors for camouflage, for attracting mates, for a lot of different things. And so we can make similar ideas, suggestions about what T-Rex would have been using their feathers for, now that we know that they probably had feathers.
Okay, unfair question, because you're not a specialist in the Poduncus holiokensis or the other one who I can never say.
Ankylosaurus.
Ankylosaurus, thank you, the two local dinosaurs. Did they have feathers? Do we know?
As far as I know, they're not preserved in places where feathers would be preserved. You need really specialized, like fine-grained sediment to preserve feathers. But if I had to make an inference, Podokisaurus probably had feathers, given that it's sort of a coelophysis-type animal. And Ankylosaurus, maybe not as much because of the type of dinosaur that it is. It's one of these ancestral forms of long-necked dinosaurs. And because they got so big, you know, part of the job of feathers is to keep the animal warm.
Like an ankylosaurus, like that, with the really long neck and the...
Like a brachiosaurus.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So our Massachusetts dinosaurs, maybe one naked, one not.
Correct.
Okay. Yes. All right. And on that note, this has been a blast. Ohenia Gold is an assistant professor of biology at Suffolk University and a paleontologist. This is just good old-fashioned fun. It's wonderful to wonder. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.